dann herzlichen Dank. Ich wünsche euch wahnsinnig viel Spaß und dir viel Spaß beim Vortragen.
Thank you very much, Martin. And thank you, the space, the Chaos Community, for allowing me to speak here and present here. This is the first public appearance of this project, and I feel very honored to be here. And for those of you that don't know about the CCC, I just want to encourage you to look into what they have done and what they're doing, not specifically the organization itself, but the people that hang out here and that engage around here. They do a lot of very important stuff. They look at things that others that goes unnoticed by a lot of people, and they, if it wasn't for some people here, there would be a lot of stuff we wouldn't know about, and I think that should be said, and so I want to encourage you to look into it. And with this, I wish I could start it. All right, so one more thing before I start. I thought about how can I start this presentation, and the most easy way would have been to list the things of all the things that are going wrong right now in politics and communication, but that's not the note I want to start on, because using fear to motivate people is actually quite the opposite of what this aims to do. So this aims to enable you and actually take fear out of it, because politics and news become more observable. And thus, I'm not going to show Elon Musk doing a Hitler salute or extensive Fox News headlines or all the other things. Just want to, you know, keep it in mind. And that's, well, we'll go through the problem section quite quickly, because I think most of it is self-explanatory. So this is what explaining politics looks all too often. And the reason for it is just as simple. It's because it's a big clusterfuck. There's all these things to keep track of. There's sources, there's the actors, they all have different interests inside of different organizations and states, so it's just a very long list of things to keep track of. And that is understandably quite hard. I mean, even for the people that are into reading news and politics, it takes a lot of time every day to just stay up to date. And even then, it's hard to have a long-running system of actually tracking what is happening in communication, in politics, or in news. And that's what this aims to do. So making the overview easier, but also the analysis of what is happening. And I generally ask three questions. So what is even happening? Because that is one of the hardest questions at all. And who wants your attention where? Which becomes obvious, and if you read a lot of news, you know, there's emphasis of certain outlets, or there's things they just don't talk about at all. And important is, how can we measure that? Because if we read news, we might know that ourselves, and okay, if we become a journalist, we make that our work, but kind of hard to have something substantial from politics and measure that just on everyday basis. And the solution set that I came up with is three parts. So it's aggregating data and engineering insights. This is really technical stuff. Scrape a lot of stuff, do tech magic with it, and have more access to what is in there. So we're talking about text as data. So most of it is really news articles, could be legislative documents, could be communication issues from governments. But most of the realm is going to be in text. And really important is open source, because I wouldn't want to trust any system that does like things like media analysis and even also rating and aggregation on automated in an automated way on a really large scale, and I wouldn't expect anyone else to. So I think open source is really has to be the philosophical base of building such a thing. And this is actually the moment that I'm going to give the first look into the software, because we're going to do a mix between a demonstration and a presentation, because I figured just putting everything on slides is not doing it, just showing this is not doing it, so here we are. So this is the first thing. I know it looks fancy, and for the techies it might be super basic, you put things on a globe, but it was really hard to find anything where you could just see news on a globe. So, and this is what I consider now the baseline feature of open politics, having news on the globe. And what you can see here is that different articles are classified into a certain kind of event. So they might be about economic news, they might be about war, about cooperation events, and you put them on a map. And so this is the first moment of that should give more overview of what is happening. And this is only the starting point, because you want to look at news from a lot of different ways. And classifying these into events is already the first thing that is going to be very important later. So how do we classify that? Because that is one of the biggest questions. In a classical news outlet, there would be journalists that decide what goes where, how is it to be rated, and what can you do with it. And I want to showcase some really what I consider more basic features, which is just plugging data into it. So if we go to Germany, we don't see just news, which are in here. So the news are a bit older. I loaded the test data set into it. But you can, for example, also see economic data, see how Germany is doing. Yeah, those were hard times here. And entities. So entities could be anything, could be a person, a location, an organization, but you want to know who's in the text. And then you want to keep track of what they're doing, where do they appear in, what articles, and what relevance do they might have to the location. And I'm also going to jump through here and go through legislative. So this is another data storage. For example, we're in Germany. This is now from the Bundestag, the laws, the most recent laws pulled. So this is the first thing, just giving you access to different data pools that if you want to do an analysis or just stay up to date, that are not aggregated in this way. And there we go to the one of the most important things, which is these scores here. So right now you see just four random scores. So there's global political, regional political, and here we also classified the rhetoric type. So, and this is for the technical people now. It's really basic, most of it. It's baseline processing. You have the text, you pull the entities out. If it's a location, you put a geocoder or not. And then you have a location. And then you can put it on a map. So if you want to know more about this, we're going to do a review session later after the initial presentation, which is going to delve more into some of the topics like LLMs and rhetorics and data storages. And so, yeah. And these data storages could be really anything, right? It's a Bundestag documents, could be news from Italy, communication from the IMF, EU laws. We just make this our first priority to have easy access to these. And then I want to switch to why natural language and AI is becoming a really useful tool. And especially if we think about media analysis and all kinds of documents that we want to use for them. So this is examples from Fox News today. Just the language they use, I think it's quite apparent that it's very appalling, and it's always used in a way to emotionalize people. And that is actually, I mean, if you're human, it's quite easy trackable, right? You have a certain definition of what is populism, what are rhetoric tricks, and you could pick these out and say, okay, this is obviously used in a way to move people. And so this is one phenomenon itself, but there's more. The styles, emphasis, demonization, what they leave out is something that I think we all have keep track of. But there's a few more things. For example, large-scale campaigns. We don't know for sure, but it's quite possible that Russia has been leading in a really subversive communication campaign for the last 10 years now. And I mean, we kind of know it, but we don't know the extent, right? We don't know how much of it is happening and what influence it has. So it would be really cool to kind of track that and actually see, okay, where are certain spikes in the rhetoric? Where does something come up? Or when does something disappear? I mean, that's also interesting, right? You could have something very often mentioned, and then zoop, it's gone. So, but without a measurement, you wouldn't know that, right? It just, maybe you remember at some point, oh, there used to be this thing in the news, now it's gone. For example, does anyone remember that there were like really a lot of terrorist threats on the US election, on the night of the election? I just remembered yesterday, and I've completely forgot. But things like that. And this is my favorite quote in the realm of natural language and AI. It's from a very famous AI engineer. English is the hottest new programming language. And that already applies to how communication is done, right? From institutions to people to businesses, their way of interacting and programming is natural language. But now, I think with AI and LLMs, there has been a reverse, because accessing and working with computers has always been a way of just doing code. And now you can interact with a computer in a way that you just use natural language. And natural language is something way more people are proficient in. So journalists, researchers, historians, writers, these people are all proficient in natural language, but they don't know how to code. But they can ask the right questions, and that is really important. Because we have two types of tasks, mainly, if we want to label and classify text. We either want to have a score, so we might ask, how much is populist rhetoric used, plus a definition, and then we get a score. Or we might say, give me a certain set of labels. So that's actually, you end up with mostly with these kinds of data that you want out of it. And you don't have to have an extensive data pipeline that's written in Python and really accessible to a subset of the population, but anyone could, you know, just not just design the question, but also criticize it, right? In the way that, for example, Wikipedia works. Might be, okay, that's the definition, but this is a bit, so. And in the context of this application, this is really interesting, because I think seeing how these are rated, seeing what prompt is behind it, gives you way more insight into how the data comes to you. So if you just read news from an outlet, you kind of know their position and how they write about stuff, but there's no exact retraceability to how that came to be. And I think that's very, very important that I could show you here now how this was produced. In that case, it was a really simple prompt. It was classified into one of these events. But that was it. And I was able to work with the text and I wasn't before. And I want to give another example of this, which is the paper that I did with my professor, Dr. Tobias Hoffmann, who's also here, where we did something with AIs that is usually done by people, which is coding or rating speeches. And this is a very simple use case. We had 1,000 speeches of members of the EU Parliament, and we asked how much they prefer either a stance which prefers security or pro-asylum, because these are generally the dimensions that they walk on, right? So either you really pro-security and don't care about migrants at all, or you are, which is not the only, you know, that's not the only relation between these two, but generally these are the arguments, or you're one who supports human rights and migration. And what the first thing that made this plausible for us to use is actually directly what we saw. I mean, on the right side down here, you see these are the scores for the speeches, and that's exactly what you would expect from a from the positions in the European Parliament. And even if you put the parties onto it, you can see it matches quite well. So on the left, kind of there's the SPD, for example. On the right, there's the CDU. But the interesting part was, what did this save us? This saved us hours of manually going through each speech and trying to assign it a score, which is amazingly fine if you do just like a bunch of documents, which takes 20, 30, 40 documents, but how about 10,000, a million? How about doing that continuously? And yeah, that's not going to be possible. And just to mention it, the peer review we got, so there's a lot of things about debiasing, because LLMs do have bias, and it's very important to keep that in mind, but there's certain statistical tricks where you can essentially clean the values that they get out of it, even if they are biased. And the other thing is benchmarking. You kind of want to know where what kind of biases are. And this goes the same way with media, so there's not just emphasis and leaving out, but there's different styles of how bias are enforced. For example, if we talk about censorship, everybody knows something like DeepSeek, where you ask something about Tiananmen, and then, sorry, I can't answer that. But there's also, yeah, it's a bit more complicated, and yeah, So you're not really getting a good answer either. It's just prettier packed. And this is also something you would want to measure, especially if you want to use LLMs in this context. All right, so I end the top, you see the prompt that we use. It's really simple. saved us a lot of hours. We could confirm that these values were very much aligned with other research because we used reproduced a paper that already had similar values and was also very concurrent with our values. And that's kind of where it might click. Because you could extend this to any dimension. You can think of something really, I mean, you can think of a scale that comes to your mind that doesn't exist before, and then rates all the text you have along that dimension and measure it. And that's the most important part. And I think at this point it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it should be if I show you how you can use it here. So I'm just going to bookmark a few articles. And so here are these articles now. I'm going to select them. And I've prepared a classification scheme which says, tell me if this article has signs for war is increasing. Right? It's just, I mean, if there's an article about a peace agreement, the score should be very low. And if it's an article about war, it should be very high. And you can go even more nuanced. You can say, okay, what should be considered as increasing signs? But for this example, it's not very simple. And I just do that and have this. And have measured it. And this extends to all the scales you can think of, to all the measurements you want to, on any data you want to. And I think this is really can be really helpful in observing things that we might know, but we don't have proof of. And also help people that you do stuff like this every day, journalists, researchers, to make their life easier. And so all of this is generally, it's agnostic to the data, it's agnostic to the models, it's agnostic to the classification schemes. It's meant to give all the people that don't know how to code access to a really high-powered system that can work. I mean, let me say this to the system. Systems like these do exist that keep track of politics and news, and they're just not accessible to us, right? There's a lot of institutions, governments, maybe big corporate think tanks or whatever, that do have these systems. There's just nothing for us, and that's what I want to change. And on the globe, there was also another example of how we're directly going to use it. So we have all these classifications of, okay, what kind of event this is, what rhetoric is this used, how relevant is this, and we might want to see how different entities appear in these contexts, because that would enable us to see, okay, do they relate, do they not relate, or in any case, just helps you to more intelligently select the data you want to use. And let's take Reuters. Reuters appears often because it's a news outlet and is extracted from it. But okay, here it's all over the place and not as apparent, but if you see, for example, LGBTQ, social culture interest, kind of stay the same. Regional economic impact, also no, not much change. Okay, no, so it's just letting me down, it's not working. And this is essentially it. So this is really, we want to build these data engineering tools that use that use AI and that are open source for anyone to use. But there's one more very important component, the UX. Because if you don't build a system that makes this data accessible to users or these methods, then they're really, again, still in the domain of technicals, of technical capable people. And while one part of this project is really super technical and is just about how do we put entities together in a graph, how do we do X, Y, Z, there is a whole wide world of people that should be enabled by this. And this doesn't work without a nice interface. And also, this one interface, this globe, is not going to be it, because it has to be way more than that. My grandma doesn't want the globe. I mean, she can't even see anymore, so what she do with the globe? But she would want to maybe have an automated podcast, but from a source that she knows she can trust. And I think having a public set of these definitions that we can work together on, that we can scrutinize, or you can scrap all of them and design your own, can make this a system really, really powerful for your specific use case. And I think it's very nice to keep track of some things that weren't as obvious as before. And I wanted to tell you also something about the company, just to be transparent, how we funded. So we got through the Hackathon Accelerator. This is a liberal think tank. Politically, not my heroes, but they gave me 15,000 euros without equity, so took them. Two angels. One of them is my former neighbor from Hamburg and right now works at a large tech company. And the other one is a journalist I met in a bar. And NGI Search, which is a EU open source software fund. And I want to also take this moment to point towards NGI and the projects they have, because it's a project that sadly has been now defunded, so the money is running dry. But they are funding a lot of very, very cool projects. And in the review sessions later, there's also one more thing I want to mention, the Open Web Search Index. So there's a really full web index from a European company that's open source and has done that under ethical standards, which is just an independent resource, I would say. And there's also supporters I had, which I'm very thankful for, friends and family that pulled me through this time. And now we are a company. And I wanted to do a non-profit, but to be honest, for the economic entity of such a project, I didn't see it as the best option. We're going to launch most of the tools free anyway. There's just a certain need to organize yourself, you know, as a company, as an economic entity. And so we'll probably have some kind of commercialization, but it's not going to be directly from the software itself. I imagine now that you bring your own API keys, so you can bring your processing power, and we try to get as much things for you as ready to use as we can. We cannot sponsor like the LLM processing, which is very expensive, but we can provide as much of the rest as we can. And we'll probably end up reselling API keys, so for the people that don't want to bring their API keys, we'll make that easier. And very soon, so this globe is going to go online, it's going to become free, and more tools like that, so a dashboard, which is just a different view of the same data, but yeah. And fundraising, obviously, which is hard as an open source company with no business model, but yeah. Research and development, more data spaces, and really important, and I think that's the first thing that's going to be interesting to also wider public, is running measurements on different news outlets, on different communications from states. For example, the Bundespressekonferenz of Germany is something very interesting to just see how positions of the state shift over time when they take hits in certain areas or when they don't. And that's going to be the first mission, to provide and collect some measurements of politics and what is happening to get some proof of what is even happening. And this is not really this important, but just want you to know there's these two components and they're relevant for different sets of people. For everybody that's able to code and has an interest in this, there is the stack where we build all of these things. And then there's the web app. And they're meant for different people, but they have a cross-section. And the developers and researchers are going to work on the Opal stack, I guess, and the web app is going to be for journalists, consumers, researchers, institutions, and wherever that applies to most. And yeah, I wanted to keep it brief, and I think I did. Thank you for your attention, because I would like now to go into the Q&A session, and yeah, hope you had some insight and fun.
Yeah, thank you very much for the very interesting talk. And now we have time for Q&A. So we would ask you, if possible, to use the microphone, so I would give it to you, that we have it also in the stream so that people on the internet can also see what and hear what we're talking about. So who wants to be the first one?
Hello. I hope this is working. Since you are obviously like kind of aggregating through a lot of articles and you're kind of like trying to trace back some like the history of maybe like articles and their evolution and stuff, have you considered having this system kind of working with something like the Wayback Machine?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, the people from the Wayback Machine are very fond of this project, and also other institutions like archive.is, which has one of the best, I would say, scrapers and actively running operations to collect news articles, especially. But just how is the question, right? There's a lot of data there from the past that you have to work up. I'm kind of aiming to start now, maybe a few months backwards, just because of the political situation. We have a limited budget of compute. So right now I'm really interested in seeing how populism is doing in Western countries and maybe what some trends there are in there. But it extends to any data space you could imagine. So, yeah.
Who wants to be next? Yeah.
Hi, can you pull up the short demo that you had of where you saved the articles and then
yep.
basically like a little quick analysis?
Mm-hmm. What shall we do?
I want to, like what I mean is where you save articles and then you have basically like your saved articles in a space and you...
Yeah, this is the workspace here.
Yes, exactly, thank mm-hmm. you. So it was a bit fast for me, so I want to ask again. So you selected some articles
mm-hmm.
and then you have a classification scheme. And is this classification scheme like the scale that you showed earlier where you basically extract on a scale of 1 to 10,
yeah.
how much would you say this article points towards like war, science increasing?
Yeah.
That's how it works. Okay.
We can do one right now if you want. A new one. We can do a new classification scheme right now if you want.
Oh, that's cool. The other question that I had is like how it works, that it like shows over time. Is it basically you select articles from different points of time and then it basically builds you some kind of time progression?
I mean, so the time series you see, that is the publication date of the articles. Mm-hmm. Let's do one real quick. But there's an interesting question because, I mean, the event that happens in an article is not necessarily the date it was released, right? And also, if you go really deep into it, there's a lot of issues of deduplicating, of finding 10 articles that are towards the same story. So I'm not saying that these things are answered at all, but yeah.
Okay, I got it better at first. Maybe we can talk about it later. I'm interested in this.
Images?
That's it. About this dashboard that you showed.
No, please. I mean, go ahead if you have some more questions.
No, I don't have more questions.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think it's not a Q&A session. It could also be a feedback session and an idea session. So
don't
be afraid.
I'm so sorry. Or maybe he does.
We get live participation from the internet. Who wants to be next? Yep.
Yeah. Thanks for the presentation. Really cool. Can we actually do one of these classifications?
Yeah.
Because I was wondering how that actually works.
All right. So I was thinking, while we're talking, maybe just like a random one where you could easily confirm the values. For example, I was thinking about gummy bear. How much gummy bears are in this article, something. So, which should be all zeros, right? So, let's call the scheme name gummy bears. And the description is, how much are gummy bears appearing as politically relevant entities? Prompt is on a scale from 1 to 10, where 0, 1 means no gummy bears. And which is really important is here the data type, because you want to have an integer out of it. Because I told you earlier, you might also want to have a set of labels. So you might also want to look at 50 Bundestag documents and get the most relevant topics out of it, right? So which is a different data format. Oh, thanks. Don't mean the OpenAI model. Okay, we got the scheme. And then we'll select some more text here. And don't do the war signs, but we'll do the gummy bears. 0. And I mean, that should, I hope, illustrate further how arbitrary these can be and really are at the limits of your imagination and the natural language we can use.
And how would you debug this? If you get like unexpected output or something that obviously doesn't make a lot of sense, is there like...
That's a good question, because I think right here, debugging it, you could just rerun classifications, change the prompt, which I think would be the most obvious thing. But if there's larger issues, there's going to be need of a different process. Because, I mean, generally the stack operationalizes very different methods, right? And this is one of them, doing the classifications. But, for example, benchmarking is another one. And one of our first goals would be to build benchmarks to evaluate whether or not we can use LLMs reliably in political contexts. And then, because you want to be model agnostic, right? New model comes out, you check if it's still usable or not. And furthermore, we can also provide in the future a cleaning tool, so which is this statistical cleaning thing I talked about. Depends on right on where in the tool chain, right? In the front end, debugging via the prompt engineering, and in the back end, probably via some more sophisticated methods.
So you mentioned that, I mean, the classification kind of thing is like you're using LLMs for it. So, and also you mentioned that, okay, like if somebody wants to use it, they can provide their own API keys, because obviously that would be expensive for you. Is it also possible to use like a locally run LLM for that?
Absolutely, because in the stack is already integrated OLLaMA. So there's the data engine and there's the web app. And if you boot them up both with the full local source, full local variant, then all of these things are going to be without a need for any other providers. So you're going to have the classifications from your locally run LLM. You're going to have the geocoder from your locally installed geocoder. The scraping is going to be done via a really cool infrastructure framework, which is called Prefect. And yeah, but yes, that was and that is the idea. I mean, you should be able to boot this up from anywhere, fill it with the data, do whatever with it, and we'll just organize a running hosted version with a few running data operations. And yeah.
Have you already experimented with DeepSeek?
Yes, I did, and what I found most interesting, to be honest, is the reasoning process, because when you use the OpenAI reasoning models, they don't show you how the model is thinking, right? They just show you like abbreviated captions, and I found it very interesting how was thinking, like, wait, let me do this, another angle, so very human-like. And since I know it got trained only through reinforcement learning and not supervised fine-tuning, so no humans in the loop, I found that really interesting. But of course, it's politically lobotomized, right? And there's a difference between the API you use of DeepSeek, which has another filter on it, or just a plain model, because I think the plain model actually is talking about more stuff than what you could get out of the API.
I also found that the smaller models, especially from DeepSeek, have maybe less or very different biases. So it's a very hard thing to clearly evaluate.
And that's the thing, there's going to be so many models. I mean, even in DeepSeek, it's not one model, right? It's trained on three or four different base architectures and then in different sizes. So, but that's why you want to have something to evaluate the model and just plug and play. If it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. And if it's a gray area, we might want to clean the data a bit.
Hi. I remember seeing an earlier beta of this stuff. We talked about it, and I remember you showed me that there was a way to visualize stuff on the globe that was categorized into events, wars, social stuff, and are you still, it was like one of your central themes, are you still keeping that, or is that...
I mean, this is essentially showing the, because this is now a war event, is it what you mean, or...
Yeah, I mean, you had a really, really clear taxonomy of like, okay, this is, there's an election going on there, it's green, there's stuff like that, and I just wanted to ask if you iterated on it, or abandoned the idea for something more...
No, I mean, it's still there, right? For example, here, so I think the color's not coming through, but this is a red cluster, which should show you that there's a lot of war going on. And you might have a yellow cluster, which is, I think, a lot of economic news. And then you zoom down and you see the individual events. But you maybe also have seen, and which is going to be here, where we lay more data onto the globe. So a graph, for example, you're searching for a news story, and then you get all the articles we pull out of it, and you see them on the map, and you see their events, and then you maybe see connections between two of them. I mean, it sounds very sci-fi, but I swear it's possible. And yeah, so, but it's part of research, evaluating what is actually useful and all of these things. So for now, working with color and icons is the what I found the best way. And doing it into event types. But you could also then again use any other classification scale or any other set kind of labels. Wouldn't need to be event types, could also be rhetoric types. Where's rhetoric really going strong right now, right? And yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Do you also have regional data sources, for example? What I notice is if you are asking for how many data centers are built in the Berlin-Brandenburg region, this is normally only in local newspapers or on local websites. So it's very hard to collect an overview on that. Is it possible with this?
Definitely, approach? Yeah. I mean, I didn't load them yet into it because the only problem that I haven't given a lot of thought in there is translation. Because also translating is academically not as easy because you might lose a nuance or emphasis or going to end up doing it. And the idea is also that you can curate these spaces. So according to your needs, because at one time you might want to look at economic news from Southeast Asia and your classification schemes are totally different. But then you look at German news again. And so this is what this is for, where you just switch the context. And ideally, it's not yet implemented, but you would just switch the context, the classification schemes are applied, and you see them immediately on the globe what is happening according to your research needs.
Cool. Thanks. I'm wondering, so I'm not an expert in this field at all.
Me neither.
And I'm wondering how normally when people build systems like this, how do they verify that they work? Because what I can imagine doing is you know, you take all these sources, there's a lot of bias that goes into choosing the sources, there's a lot of bias that goes into classification, you are sometimes maybe translating, a bunch of stuff gets lost, and then you end up at the end of a number 5. And how do you verify that it's the right number? Do you like consult human experts on this particular small thing, and then if you consult enough, then you know it works, but how do you know it works for a new field? I'm just wondering, yeah, I guess it's similar to debugging, but like on a large scale, how do you prove that this does what you expect it to do?
I love the question because in essence, I would say there's no answer to it because you have to argue about it, right? Especially if it's these natural language prompts. And debugging it here has multiple steps in the tool chain, right? If we're talking about now the layer of just LLMs and natural language and how you would want to verify that, you tend to use like experts, and who are experts, mostly professors and maybe people working in the field. But also that is arguable and debatable, right? But then I also think it's cool that you can debate on that, right? You can. I think you cannot debate on CNN on how they use their what is their classification scheme of what is relevant news or not relevant news. But you could hear, and not just for the space you host yourself, but the space we host. So if we have a certain definition of what classifies event, I absolutely want everyone to have a look at it, scrutinize it, and iteratively work on it to get to a better result. But since nobody has the truth that they can, you know, print out, there's no definitive answer to what is right, right? And it doesn't exist. It exists a certain point that is most likely and would be defendable from many positions, but what is right?
So on the topic of translations and sort of regional local news, would it be possible to just focus on one content in one language and sort of also use that one natural language for prompting and yeah, so assuming that all of the sources are consistently in this language. Of course, it's not global then, right? But for some subset of the world.
Absolutely. I mean, if the model is capable of speaking that language, and if you have content of the language, yeah, absolutely. That's just plug and play, right? And
there's nothing special. Like, I wouldn't need to specify the language. It's just
it would be good, kind of, to have it to categorize and to also sort out what language you cannot speak, or include languages you want to. But in the system currently, there is no nothing built in for languages, because I'm mostly working in English. The texts are in English, so. But in the future, yeah.
But does there need to be? Is my question. So if I run an instance of this myself, mm-hmm. and I only hook up German news sources and German content, mm. Is there still a point?
You mean at which English comes into play, or?
No, is there still a point to specify in the system anywhere that?
Oh no, then you wouldn't.
This
no, no,
is
no.
German.
No, then you wouldn't need to.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Thanks. Yeah.
Perfect. Thanks. I have two questions. First, would it be possible to do something like, and I'll just give a easy leftist example, to take something and look at it by news source? So for example, say, okay, Fox News, positive words about the economy, you know, mm-hmm. and then say, okay, on, you know, November 3rd, mm-hmm. Fox News is reporting yep. of the economy, started to use a lot more positive words
yep.
than, say, on November 1st,
absolutely.
Right? Like, is that something, yep. how would one do that in the system?
As of now, it's not possible, but the idea is also that if you use the search bar here and say, okay, I don't know what's happening in France, that the LLM could also build you possible selection sets. Or maybe you don't need AI, you can just like select all news sources from there, or maybe all news sources related to that entity, or all news sources related to a certain location, or yeah. even more fun, draw on the map what to include.
Yeah.
Generally want all of these capabilities. And then, yeah.
And then my second question, which is sort of a hybrid question, how do you pick out which news sources are trustworthy enough to be shown? So, for example, you have Sputnik, right, which mm-hmm. is like a Russian propaganda website. I'm sure they do report news, mm-hmm. right? But then some of their things are going to be real. Others are going to be, you know, they'll say, oh, a child was crucified in this city mm-hmm. in Ukraine. You know, there's known cases of misinformation, and these misinformation cases have a major impact on how people perceive the world. How do you sort of balance, you know, trying to take as broad, you know, as many different sources as possible with mm-hmm. sort of, okay, this source is not a, you know, how does one do that editorial choice, if you see my point?
Yep.
Because there's, you know, there's always more sources you could put on.
Absolutely.
How do you choose which ones to put?
So there is a way, which I'm going to mention first, which we're not going, which is the way that ground news goes. Because ground news, I feel, is kind of afraid to do their own judgment of things. So what do? They pull in a lot of NGOs that have certain ratings and then use these, which you can do and which is a good idea, but also makes you kind of, I don't know, dependent on other institutions. And also these can sometimes be weird NGOs. So, yeah. So since we're going to curate a few data spaces, we're going to take like responsibility for that, and the process behind it, my political science education. I don't care much, to be honest, about news sources if they're not like really just trash, like Breitbart, you don't need that. But you, for example, I read every day Fox News and CNN, Al Jazeera and Times of Israel. And they are all valid in who they, what they say and what they represent. That's the way it is, right? And they report and they influence a lot of people. And yeah, we're just going to do like a selection. But then also then that is public. And if people say, hey, I really don't like your new selection from Bangalore, there's a lot of really bad sources in there. then please change them. So that's also the process we want to have behind it, right? So not just me saying these are good sources, these are bad, though I guess generally I would be able to have a kind of sound selection. But yeah, everybody could review these, scrutinize them, ask to change them, provide, maybe create their own ones, and also maybe share them, right? You're going to say, hey, I have this data space collected here, and the classification teams, I want to share that to you, and you can use it as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And going to the next one.
I have quite high hopes. I would like to combine this with social filters like the Fediverse that works quite well already as a social filter. And I think combining that so I can get control over the algorithmic nature of the feed and have it backed by my own reasoning would be very interesting, while at the same time social filters can provide a lot of validation and refinement, I think.
I think it's two sides of a coin, right? You can totally close everything out and just read what you want and live in your bubble. But not saying that's a bad thing, but you which you could hear by selecting the new sources you want, doing certain classifications, and exclude, for example, everything that doesn't match a certain classification, that doesn't make it into your system. On the other hand, I guess it's also good to be, at least for our hosted variants and the data we have in there, to have contrast. And I think also most of it just becomes apparent if you measure it, so there's no need to label Fox News as bad if you can just see that Fox News is constantly ranking really bad in how they use language. Yeah, so, but you could be, should be able to put your filter onto it.
Yeah, so I also have like a couple questions in terms of like just kind of like to address the bias, because I'm kind of curious when you curate, like if you're looking for something about, let's say, like a certain country, and you're curating like a data set of articles and information about it, is it possible to, in this process of like aggregating this data, to basically be able to support multiple languages like at the same time? Because, for example, you know, if let's say like you take like news about China, right? If you take like Chinese sources, which would be written in a different language than English, there's kind of an inherent bias that is relative to the language itself, right?
Chinese is a very good example, because in the way Chinese is translated to other languages, there's always happening a lot of mistakes, and that's just because the language is built a different way. At the very least, if you're going to translate Chinese into English, you're going to lose the pictographic semantic meaning of the text, which always has another layer to it. And to be honest, regarding the languages, I don't have a lot of answers, because that's one of the questions I pushed for later, because I see a lot of academic problems with just translating everything to DeepL, which would have been my first approach. So.
Yeah, that's fine. The second question as well is kind of related back to the LLMs, because obviously they're a bit like of a black box, and I would say this is probably the least verifiable like part of the system, if I had to guess. Is it, have you thought of like also using like I can't like remember the particular word, but you know when you have open source LLMs and they basically remove the guardrails on them, I suppose.
You mean like modifying the model afterwards, or?
No, like for example, you know that, oh, if you have like Llama originally was, if you ask it to like, oh, how can I hack a website, and they would be like, oh, I can't do that. Yes, but then like, you know, there's people are, like basically that remove these guardrails, so in a way it's kind of removes maybe some of the bias behind it as well.
Do they remove them on the model level itself though, that they go into the weights and because, or that
No, I know it's like, no, it's related to like the fine tuning, I think, after, because
actually that, because that is a point that I recently made in the public CCC group. Sorry, let me get this done. Because I think it would be very interesting to see if there are these either holds or sinks, you know, emphasis or leaving out information of models, if we can just like retrain them or just like unlobotomize them. But I'm not entirely sure. I know there's like LoRa, these low rank adaptations. I'm not sure if you could do it with that. But that's also stuff we're looking into. If are they bad everywhere or just in certain areas? And if they are there, is there something we can do in between to make them usable?
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go to the next one.
Thanks. Hi. I was thinking about the questions which were asked concerning the usage of the sources, mm-hmm. and you said you want to curate them yourself. Is it for the moment being, or you want to always have a curated space, basically, of sources? That was my first question.
I mean, I don't particularly want to curate that all the time. I want to make that a public process as much as possible. But in that case, I mean, it's all going to be a last instance deciding of where to go into. In this case, would be the GitHub pull request. I merge it or I don't, right? But there's also a lot of things to be still developed in terms of public co-creation, public communication, and especially in, for example, selecting these sources, right? And I mean, we're going to do initial variant, but I'm actually most excited for what people will contribute to it and say, okay, this is a good selection, this is a bad selection, and then how we arrive at a newer iteration that is better.
Okay, so would that mean that eventually you could just, like the question was asked here, plug and play those sources too?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Ideally, you just really say CNN, this one, and if we don't have it, we build something flexible that just scrapes it for you. So, I mean, the idea is that if you're not technical and you get the whole thing of classifications and running it, that is as easy as possible. Saying you have a new source, okay, type it in, we see if we can scrape it for you or if we can't, or if it's in our existing database.
Okay, and then my last question to that was, how do you make visible for people who are not into the coding world that specific realms of those sources are not accessible to you at the moment? For instance, I imagine a lot of newspapers nowadays have paywalls, mm-hmm. right? So they're not really scrapable with traditional means. How do you make that visible in a way? Because if I want a specific topic with, let's say, 1,000 newspaper articles, I can, of course, go through all the different articles, but maybe I don't want to do that and use the capabilities of the tool. What do you think about that?
The funny thing is, it's more of a legal question, to be honest, because breaking through these scrape blockers, especially in Germany, especially in the EU, is more of a legal problem. Generally, already, you know, scraping that is a tough question. I think it should be totally okay because it's the subject, yeah, right? I'm not just reproducing news, but it's the subject of analysis, and I think it needs to be analyzed and should be legal. And regarding scraped, I mean, there could be maybe like ways where you get it over another institution, like the OVS web search index, or you get it through the Time Back machine. But generally, like scraped blocked / plus content where you need to pay for, kind of off limits for now.
Yeah, for sure. But then I thought, okay, could it also potentially say there's, like Google says, there's like 900,000 results to that search inquiry. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say it's 1 million articles about that topic and we're accessing, I don't know, 1.5 million of them because of this and this reason. Is that a possibility to kind of make visible for the person who is not into the code? Or
You mean understanding for the selection that was used? Ah, yeah. I'm not sure how yet, but definitely. Because not just the classification you want to retrace, but also the selection. Thing is there, how you're going to retrieve these is a very technical process, or at least at some parts, because it's going to be vector stores or from a certain entity. I'll think about it. But that's something you would want to communicate, right? The whole step of reasoning how you get these articles, how they're rated, you want to have transparent access to all of it. And not just by looking into a code base, but also by having an explainer of this is selected, why. Can you maybe repeat for the stream the question?
Yeah. Hi.
Sorry.
Can you measure the something like the distance between sources, so Kullback divergence or something like that, to detect if some mainstream is now infected by some other sources which have been right-wing in the past and now are going mainstream? Can you detect things like that?
Not directly, as we don't have a tool for it now, but you could via the scores, right? I guess you want to say, is something leading an effect or is it trailing an effect, right? Is there, and for example, AFD is kind of leading the effect and the CDU is trailing, which should be visible if you look at all the, say CDU party issued statements and the AFD issued statements and then put them on timescale. You should see that. And then ideally we also have a UI tool to make that accessible for you. But I mean, if you want to measure distance like that, then you already would have the scores. But yeah. But as just say, leading and trailing is also very important, right? Because you want to know when there's a certain spike of a certain thing, be it rhetoric, be it certain points that are emphasized, and then also how do they affect others? How do they trail that effect? And thus kind of also measure the impact of it. Which is really useful for rhetorics, right? There's certain rhetorics that are made up on the spots, and then they're kind of used. Sometimes they're really hard pushed, and it's really interesting if you can see, okay, that's where it originated, and that's how it tracked. And then, yeah.
Have you tried pulling in some satiric sources and to try whether the LLM can differentiate between them?
Satiric content is funny because it's really hard for LLMs. No, I haven't tried, but would be that, for example, would be a good benchmark test, right? If an LLM is capable of seeing that something should be is satiric, and thus the actual score is not what would be the most likely score that you see out of it. If it's talking about how bad migrants are, but it's doing it in a way that is obviously satirical, then you wouldn't give it a 10 on how bad is it talking about migrants. Yeah, so I guess that goes to the benchmark section.
I had one more question about why the focus is so strong on news sources, actually. Because you already showed you have some laws passed, decisions. But my logical thought, why not extend that to, I don't know, social media, for example, right? I know how difficult and scraping and all that is, of course. But the idea maybe of having such a map with like real like heat mapping where stuff is happening and how things are changing, because you always have this extremely strong bias, as you already said, right? So you have a reporting that is done that is through a lens, through an industry, of course, also. So have you thought about that?
I've thought about it. And there's a few reasons why I don't aim to engage in social media analysis. One is I don't want to run these analyses about people, because this is meant as the opposite to that, right? There's a lot of systems running these classifications on people, but no. And the other thing is that social media, for example, if you take X, it's very messy, it's very polluted, and also that's a way for actors to mess with your data. So if you don't want to have useful data, you can also just pollute it, and I think that's one thing that actually happens with social media. And it's such a large question, because also different working, you know, they used to pay dozens of engineers to figure this stuff out, how to detect bots and everything. And I would say the core of the answer is actually that, just where I'm coming from. Political science, as you look at a lot of institutions, of actors, of news, and you try to go with what people say. For example, when we looked at the speeches from the EU, if you have to have their statements, and these can also be on social media, right? I'm not saying you don't want to pull anything from social media, but I would say it's a slightly different target and how you approach text as data. And if you take something like a news article or a statement, you can be sure that there has been a process and a verification that this is what they wanted to issue. And I think that's not kind of the same, not right the same on social media, because people just shout stuff out, and then it kind of also makes your data hard to use.
I was also wondering if you could present like some future like actual use cases, like what how do you imagine this tool to be used when it's finished, other than your grandma and the podcast?
For example, the first really important thing that I think a lot of people want is an issue-based news tracker, which automatically you have an interest in, say, economy in Southeast Asia or civil rights in North Africa, and then they are just pulled for you, and either they're classified as your schemes or we provide you, and then you can just go onto the page, see what is happening in your area of interest, and read and leave. So I think a lot of this right now is like active mechanisms where you have to engage yourself, and which is what a lot of users don't want, right? So there's going to also be passive variants, just going onto a dashboard and seeing news. Does that answer the question? Or
hi. Are these news on the map news that are about the country or the place, or is it from the country?
So this, these are now classified by, again, a prompt that says extract the locations most relevant to the article. So for now, all these prompts are very simple because the whole process of what prompts is a different stage where you create like libraries. These are publicly accessible and criticizable. So we're really interested with basic prompt engineering here. Yeah, but you could also then change, right? You could also say that only locations should be there that are, mentioning a certain topic. That maybe, for example, that only countries that are target of rhetoric right now, right? For example, if you would look right now at South Africa from the United States, because of Musk and Trump, there would be a lot of negative statements issued towards that location. That's something you could do.
Can you push it? Is it working? Okay, just as a quick follow-up to what he asked, I mean, there are already news aggregators, right? Like Google News, you can put in, oh, I'm interested. My Google News still tells me what's happening in Rhode Island, where I lived like 10 years ago because it figured out I used to live there and hits me with all the, you know, what do you see differing your news aggregation from, say, Google News's news aggregation, if that makes sense?
So first thing I would say is open source. That you kind of, I mean, Google is doing whatever Google wants right now, and Google has erased their promise to not develop AI for weapons 2 days ago, and then just poof, right? Yeah. They go their values. I think they even changed their "don't be evil" statement. Yeah, that's all. But I generally hope that there is going to be so many more features that just haven't been there, haven't been seen, that there is a whole new way of working and also taking in news.
Okay, so I have also another question about kind of like the sources for the news or the information in general. Is there or is there plans or maybe just an idea of like supporting not just like the big, you know, like news like organizations, but maybe like more like independent journalists and things like that? Because sometimes there are stories that the big news organizations don't really care about for, and the only sources that you'll find for it might be in like that independent journalist world or just smaller smaller operations in general.
Absolutely. I mean, again, I would say since it's agnostic to the data, you can just plug it in and use these as your data space. The thing about like these institutional outlets is that they have a certain political position. I mean, it's very much decreasing. It used to be way bigger. But the way like CNN shapes the public opinion is a lot different to how independent journalists do. And I think as the subject of analysis, it's not the same. Because, I mean, okay, maybe there is going to be a trend in independent journalists that they all do a certain thing. But the idea is more to track where there's a certain intention to to show stuff in a certain way, in a certain light, to put attention on certain areas or not. And my understanding of independent journalists is rather that they are free of the normal structural prohibitions that force you to have such a point of view, right? If you go into CNN, they can expect you to have a certain point of view. If you're an independent journalist, you don't.
I was kind of like thinking about it in terms of this being a tool of you also investigating in a way, like you can, you know, like yeah. almost doing a meta-analysis through like other also independent journalists.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. It is also a tool meant for journalists and researchers, right? That they can easier gather their news, have just more ready at hand of what they might need for their publications. Yeah, I think a better answer I don't have.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just there will be one more question. I already recorded your interest. So, but afterwards, I would suggest we do maybe a small break. I know that you want to do like a bit of breakout sessions format afterwards. So, in order to get a bit of air in and I think just a bit of movement, I would suggest we do this one question. Then we have a bit of a break, like 5 minutes, and then or 10. And then we can continue with your format?
Maybe even regarding the sessions, because we have talked about a lot of things already, I would just ask Groom, is there any people who want to dive deeper into some topics like benchmarking, entity graphs, stuff like that? Because then we would do them. If not, then I guess we won't. So hands up, who wants to do a deep dive later? All right, we do a deep dive.
Good. That's quite some good interest. So I would give you the space for the last question, and then we will wrap up the main part of the talk.
All right, thanks. Yeah, so also on the thought of sources and, different sets of sources. So you talked about social media. We've seen and you've talked a lot about news outlets. How about using, so having one instance that is only fed with all of the official sources, so say transcripts of speeches in parliament and in Bundestag, etc.
Absolutely. I mean, this way the news is just like the most apparent way, but it's agnostic to data, right? So, and Bundestag, EU speeches, and the Bundespressekonferenz transcripts, and so the German government issued statements are going to be the first running operations where we continually measure. And so we'll curate an information space that you can use, which is already pre-filled with the data.
Thanks.
Cool. Thank you all much for your questions.
And thank you very much for your talk. It was amazing. Okay. Yeah, so now the continuation will be much less formal. So I would suggest, let's do the small break, and then afterwards everyone who wants to dive a bit deeper can congregate here in this area and then can continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much.